Welcome into Smashville Live here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Let's talk Preds hockey for the next hour, as we do every Wednesday night here on your radio home for Nashville Predators hockey. My name's Max Herz. I'm your host tonight. As always, Smashville Live is presented by our friends at New Amsterdam Vodka, Red Spirits and Wine, and Spring Hill Heating and Cooling tonight. We've got Sportsnet NHL insider Elliot Friedman coming up at 6:30. And a little bit of a change of plans for the first half of the show. We will hold off on having a member of the Preds front office join us, and we've got plenty more shows this year to get that in. But we've got someone else who is just as well-dressed and almost as hard to book in our own program director, Chase McCabe, a.k.a. The Suit, who in many iterations of his life has been a Nashville Predators insider. And Chase is here. It's great to see you, Chase. Hey. I haven't seen you in like a week.
I know. It's been a minute. Thank you, Max. It was funny. I got to go to Vegas for a little R&R, but I actually went to T-Mobile Arena and saw the Golden Knights take on the Nashville Predators.
Nice.
Was obviously not the outing that the Predators had been looking for. Was something that Vegas needed, you know, in their quest to make the playoffs. I mean, what's crazy is, you know, they have all this stuff that says year five and it has the V, you know, the Vegas V, but, you know, for five, and it's like they've made the playoffs every year in their existence, and they already got banners and everything, but could potentially miss it for the first time. But anyway, it's good to be here. This role. Usually I'm hosting, so it's kind of fun.
Should I be grilling you? Should I be asking you a million questions?
Well, you can ask me all you want, because I don't have any decision-making capabilities when it comes to the hockey team. So, you know, the radio station, yes, but the hockey team, no. I mean, I can give you my thoughts on signing Forsberg or what they did or didn't
if
do.
If it were
the
up
deadline
to you, I think the contract would have already been signed, Chase McCabe.
Yeah, but I also understand the due diligence that David Poile is going through right now, because you want to get the fair offer for Philip, but also the fair offer for the team, and I think that what we've seen the last few years with some of these long-term contracts, you know, trading Ryan Ellis a couple of years into his it hasn't panned out with Duchesne and Johansson until maybe now. You're starting to see a return there, but I get the hesitation, but at the same time, Forsberg is one of those talents that just doesn't grow on trees. So, you know, you're gonna have to do something. I think letting him walk away, especially now that the trade deadline's passed, you know, is not what they want to do. And I don't think it is what they're going to do. I do think ultimately they're going to get a deal done. And as David likes to joke with us, and he's actually usually joins Darren Donick and Chase on Tuesdays at 11:15. He will actually join tomorrow at 11:15. He jokes and he says, listen, we're close. We just got to get the years and the money, and then we'll be good to go. So I think they get it done.
Chase McCabe's our guest here on Smashville Live here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, and we're a week and a half separated from that trading deadline now, and two Sundays ago the Preds got Jeremy Luzon, left-handed defenseman from the Seattle Kraken, for a second-round pick. Pretty much about what we expected at the deadline, an extra body on defense, and we've seen him have an impact through these first couple weeks.
Yeah, and I like the move. I like what I've seen from him, and I think that John Hines and his coaching staff, they're kind of trying to figure out where he fits. Now, obviously, if you look at, and I use this word weakness, meaning just where they're beat up the most, it is the defense core. And so he's, you know, maybe had to move around just because they can't get him put in the right spot because of all the injuries that they've had. But, you know, overall, I think he's been fine. I don't think they've asked him to do too much. I've been curious to see what Jeremy Davies could be, and I'm glad to see him, you know, getting an opportunity, because I felt like in training camp, and I've actually had this conversation with John Hines of, you know, he's an NHL roster or NHL caliber player that's had to play in the AHL just because of a numbers game. Well, now with the injuries and stuff, he's able to play and get that opportunity. So he was somebody that, you know, they obviously had a lot of faith in when they traded PK Subban to, you know, he was a part of that trade. And I just don't think they've been able to really see exactly what he can do. So I'm glad he's got that opportunity. But, yeah, I mean, I didn't expect them to be active at the deadline at all. I thought it would be depth moves. I never thought for a second they were going to trade Forsberg.
Nope.
And
they can't. They
no, yeah. no, no. And so he David has been very, very good about making those depth moves that at the moment you may think, okay, well, you don't need him, but then later on he could show up and be important. I mean, the year they went to the Stanley Cup final, the trade was P.A. Parenteau. That was it. And he didn't really do anything, but he was a good depth piece to have along.
Well, and
the
there's
way.
No harm, no foul either if the trade doesn't work out like that right. in a smaller move.
Right.
So that's the exact type of move that the team should be making. And the, bringing a defenseman in the last 2 weeks, the last seven games, the Predators have dressed 11 defensemen.
Yeah, it, so you need that's what's though. Unreal.
Yep.
That's what's crazy is just the number of defensemen that they've gone through. And you have to like this defense core overall, Max. I mean, I think when Mark Borowiecki's healthy, the Burrow Cop is exactly what you're looking for with this identity. Matt Benning, to me, has always been somebody that I thought was underrated on this defense core. And I think people get too caught up sometimes in – they see, well, he doesn't score a lot, or, you know, they expect everybody to be Shea Weber or Roman Josi, and they don't grow on trees. I mean, a defenseman with 81 points is just crazy, but that's Roman Josi. They're playing their role. You're just third-pairing guys, and you know, Lozan is the same way. He's a third-pair guy. That's what you're looking for. I think that they're still trying to figure out, and I know he's been hurt, what Dante Fabbro exactly is.
Yeah.
They're trying to figure out what Jeremy Davies is exactly. Carrier is showing that, okay, he's probably a second-pair guy. I've really liked his game in the rookie year that he's had. And then Matthias Ekholm continues to be probably the most underrated defenseman in the National Hockey League. And, yes, I'm biased, but he doesn't get the credit that he deserves. But to your stat of 11 D-men, that's unreal.
In the last 2 weeks, it's unbelievable. But they found a way to win the majority of those games, and it all starts with Josi and Ekholm. You're going to have one of those two guys on the ice 80-plus percent of the game, every game, and they don't play together much. So you really get a lot of mileage out of your two best defensemen, both of whom are left-handed, both of whom play on both specialty teams, and both of whom are just drivers in both zones.
Yeah, and they've gotten that. It is funny that your top two defensemen don't play together.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that one goes to the philosophy of, you know, getting, you know, having a right-handed shot and a left-handed shot play together. But also it's a good thing because you know you have two very good defensive pairs that you can turn to. And then you have two leaders, obviously, that you lean on and off the ice in Josi and Ekholm. So nobody's surprised by that. And I love when Ekholm gets intense and you can tell that he's a little pissed off. He starts shooting out. Some of the officials don't like dealing with that, and he gets sent to the box. But you know, he's got that edge about him, and that's what that I can remember, and you may remember this because I don't know if you were interning at the time with the Preds or not, but when Barry Trotz basically was like, "Yeah, he's got to toughen up," and all, if he's scared, get a dog, I think was his line. and to see Ekholm now, and the player that he's become, I would say that it has worked out. And so he's been one of those go-to guys for Peter Laviolette and now John Hines.
Chase McCabe and Max Herz here on Smashville Live, ESPN 102.5 The Game. And Ekholm had assists on the three Preds non-empty net goals last night. And they came in very different ways. The first one, a shorthanded goal, a clear the full length of the ice that he – maybe he'll say he did this on purpose. I don't know. He got the puck to sit in the no-play zone in the corner. Michael McCarron digs it out and scores.
Oh, what a play. I mean, that was fantastic. And McCarron, I love McCarron's game right now. I mean,
yeah.
Big Sexy. You know, what a name. But he, you know, I think that this team is truly the team that is, you know, you can't define them as lines 1, 2, 3, 4. They all have their role. And that's why I think we come up with these nicknames for lines, because you feel almost like you're disrespecting them if you say the fourth line, or you're disrespecting, know, the herd line by saying the third line or whatever. They all have their roles, and you know, John Hines is the same way. He doesn't like to put a number on it, but it was a great play, you know, from Ekholm, and then McCarron able to bury it. You know, the only disappointment was I don't know what was up with the OC last night. He didn't register a point. I mean, it's just, to me, that's just unexcusable. I mean, the fact that he just couldn't do that, and that point streak comes to an end. I mean, 81, like, come on. You know, you look big goose egg last night. But, no, I'm kidding, obviously. But what a stat that was. I mean, what a run that was.
Yeah. The Preds have been a wagon recently, and their best players have been their best players. And it's interesting talking about McCarron, a fourth-line center who back in September, October, probably wasn't someone who we would have projected to be in that role.
No.
And he's played to his strengths and found a spot there.
Yeah, and I think that you need one or two of those guys every year, the ones that come out of nowhere. You know, last year it was Carrier and Janot, and then Carrier and Janot brought that to this year. And Janot went to a different level, a level that, you know, maybe we didn't think he had, but now he's over 20 goals. And, you know, I look at him, Darren McFarland, and I've had this conversation all year, is he the new Craig Smith? That steady Eddie. You know what you got in him, night in and night out. He's good for 20 or more goals a year. I mean, right now, the way he's playing, I mean, he's obviously got more edge than Craig Smith does. More, you know, brings the body. That was not Craig's game at all. But if this is what Tanner Janot is moving forward, hey, you got a hell of a player there. And the same with Carrier. And then to your point on McCarron, I think they're seeing that they have – that Austin Watson type, you know, somebody that is more known for the physical game, but they can get those dirty goals in the dirty areas, which is every team needs a guy like that.
Yeah, he extends offensive zone shifts, and he digs the puck out along the wall in the defensive zone too.
Yeah, and I just like his overall game, and you can tell the coaches do too. And he had what you see so many times, and I think that Glass is doing this right now in Milwaukee. I don't think we've heard the last of Cody Glass.
I hope not.
Because I think there's a lot of talent there. And the reason I bring him up is McCarron's the same way. He had that first pick or first round that he had to shake off. And, you know, sometimes it just – the journey's longer. Even though you're a first-round pick, it's not that you're not living up to being a first round pick. You're just not living up to what everybody's definition of a first round pick is. And him getting out of Montreal and kind of starting over and resetting, I think was good for him. And he's obviously found a place where he fits.
Yeah. And Nick Cousins, his line mate, said last night, he thinks he's the most improved player on the team this season.
I totally agree with that. He's because he's playing with confidence, and that's what you need.
Two goals last night, one on an empty net, shorthanded on a funky little wraparound out of the no play zone. And then the nasty mitts in front. He deked himself a little too hard and still got it to go. So a perfect night for Michael McCarron. The first two Preds goals in a 4-1 win over the Senators last night. We'll take a break, come back. More of Smashville Live with Chase McCabe, our special guest for the first half of the show. Reminder that Elliot Friedman from Sportsnet will join us at 6:30 to finish up the show tonight, which, as always, is presented by New Amsterdam Vodka, Red Spirits and Wine, and Spring Hill Heating and Cooling. Here on 102.5 The Game. Welcome back to Smashville Live here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Max Herz and Chase McCabe with you, talking Preds on this Wednesday night. Smashville Live, as always, is presented by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, and Red Spirits and Wine, and Chase McCabe's Hood of Bellevue. So make sure to hit them up when you're going to see Chase out there. Elliot Friedman will join us at 6:30, and we welcome Chase back in for his final 10 minutes of the day, as the suit is nice enough to join us.
Yeah, good to be here. And it's funny, like, since I've moved into this role, you know, obviously I'm not on the air every day. And so, you know, usually I would be checking the standings every day and trying to weigh out all the playoff scenarios and different things, and I'm not. And it's kind of fun to, you know, jump in every now and then and look at it and be able to talk about those things. This battle for second place in the Central Division is going to be fun, because you have three, in my opinion, well, four really good teams, even though I think this is more of a three-horse race. Dallas is hanging on, and Dallas could, you know, there's certainly enough time that they could jump in there. But it feels like Minnesota, Nashville, St. Louis are the likely options to get, you know, second through fourth in that Central Division. Colorado, I mean, they got 100 points. So, I mean, they're in cruise control now for that top spot in the West and in the Central. But, you know, Nashville with the win last night, they've won two in a row. That was huge for them. And now sit 4 points back in Minnesota. But Minnesota, of course, has won seven in a row. They've been on a tear as of late. That is just fun to watch.
Yeah.
You know, and I love that you kind of get the playoffs to the playoffs, because as we remember, when the Predators have been, and granted this is a different team, it's a different coaching staff, but I think the same philosophy applies. When they went to the Stanley Cup final, they had to scratch and claw to get in. And so basically the last month and a half of the season, they were playing playoff games. And so they were already in that playoff mode when they got to Chicago, and Chicago being the number one seed. And then, you know, you see teams that coast their way, you know, they're like, they got it wrapped up 6 weeks out, and they get beat. And that happens a lot. So I think with the mindset of this team, and I've heard a lot of the players say it, that they feel like they're already playing playoff games, I think that's going to be good for them when they get into the playoffs.
Yeah, and they haven't had more than two bad games in a row since that really became the sentiment, too.
Yeah.
So that's how you win seven-game series. And looking at the Western Conference playoffs, in my opinion, four of the five best teams are in the Preds division.
I would agree with that. So Colorado, Minnesota, St. Louis, Nashville.
Yeah, and then the Flames would be the other one in the mix. And
yep.
To be honest with you, I could make an argument that the Flames would be fifth out of those five, and that the four best teams in the West are all in the same division.
Yeah.
At least in terms of cup-winning potential.
Yeah, and I think the Central, everyone has looked at the Central as being the toughest division in hockey.
For so long.
And it is. And, you know, Minnesota, Willie Donick may disagree with me, Minnesota has been my surprise, because I knew they were going to be improved and be decent, but I didn't think they would be able to sustain it all year, and they have. I Colorado started off slow, but I think everybody knew they were going to rise to the top. They are by far the best team in the Western Conference. But Minnesota's been interesting, and I want to see how that translates to the postseason, because there are some teams that are built for the regular season, and then they get to the postseason and they just don't have the horses. And truthfully, I mean, you look at the Predators and you have a lot of question marks because they're so young and you have so many rookies that they played. How will they hold up when it matters? You know, you had Janot and a few others, Carrier, that went through that playoff series against Carolina last year. But how can they handle if they have to travel, you know, to the West Coast and play the Pacific Division? You know, these fights with Minnesota or Colorado or St. Louis, something like that. Time will tell. But I agree with you on what you said about the teams in the West and being in the Central.
Yeah, we'll see the Wild here in two of the final 15 games. The Wild haven't been here since before COVID.
Yeah.
Which is pretty hard to believe for a team that every year except last year is in the division. But we still haven't seen them all the way into April, and we're going to see them when they get here.
Yeah.
With Marc-Andre Fleury in goal.
Yeah, it's weird, too, like on teams that they haven't seen since COVID. I mean, they've had all these tribute videos because Austin Watson's been gone for a little bit now. But
two full seasons.
This is the first time that he's been back, and I'm really glad they did one for him, because Austin Waddy's a great guy. I mean, I love Austin Watson. So I'm glad to, you know, see him doing so well. But it's just kind of funny that, you know, now I'm kind of dialed back into this. This is the Central Division and, you know, how it's supposed to be. Yet there's all these teams that they haven't been to Bridgestone Arena in a while. So looking forward to seeing the Wild, because I think those are going to mean a lot. Every point matters at this point.
And I was with you, too. I wasn't sold on them until this recent stretch. But I think I am now.
Well, now that they got Fleury.
Right. But I also think that the Blues would beat them in a seven-game series.
Man, I don't know. Marc-Andre Fleury is going to be the X factor for them. Because
absolutely.
I feel like, one, this, you know, he thought about retirement when he got traded from Vegas. This could be like his last shot to get another one. Now, he's won the Stanley Cup before, obviously, but this, you know, you always want the next one. And I think that from what Hal Gill has told me, Marc-Andre Fleury is like the nicest human being ever. Like,
yeah,
maybe even nicer than Pecorine, which is crazy to think about. And so you pull for a guy like that, but I feel like he's got to be the most determined, nice individual that there ever has been, because, you know, if I'm being honest, he's kind of gotten dogged a little bit, you know? I mean,
two teams have given up on him.
Right, which is kind of crazy. You know, Pittsburgh moved on from him after doing so much for that franchise, and then he becomes the face of the franchise the moment he walked across the stage for Vegas when they started their team, and then they just ship him off and, you know, move on from him. And now look at him. I mean, they're in the position they're in because they don't have goaltending depth because of all the injuries that they've had. So they, you know, they would love to have him right now. And then Chicago, you know, just turned out to be terrible. And so they did the right thing of trading him off, and now he's with a good team. So I think there's determination from Flower's side that could help Minnesota beat some teams that maybe they're not supposed to.
Last thing for you, Chase, and I'm looking forward to asking Elliot Friedman this as well next to get a more league-wide perspective. Right now, the way this year's Preds team plays seems to fit playoff hockey perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
Do we think playoff hockey still looks the same after how long we've gone without normal playoffs? Do we think that style still wins?
Yeah, I do, and I think it could even be a little more elevated this year.
All right.
Just because the key in all of this is going to be you're going to have the atmosphere. And, you know, we felt it a little bit last year with the Predators, and they had started to let almost full capacity in that series against Carolina. You know, I know the Pekka's last game, which was against Carolina, it felt like there were, you know, 80,000 people inside that arena. And so I think that's going to dictate a lot of what happens. But I do, Max. I do think that these teams are going to be hungry to, you know, go lift that Stanley Cup like they are every year, but in a different sense of that, even though COVID's not completely gone, we're starting to get on the other side of things, and things do feel – we're kind of at that new normal we all talked about. So I think the intensity is going to be there.
He's Chase McCabe. Follow him on Twitter at ChaseOnGame, a.k.a. The Suit, our program director, our host, our lifelong Preds insider. Chaser, thanks for hopping in tonight.
Hey, enjoy Elliot, because he is the man, and he's going to join Darren Donick and me tomorrow at 1 o'clock.
And Derek, who? It's been Derek so Mason, long since you've been on the show.
Whatever, DDC. He'll join us tomorrow at 1, but I'm glad you're going to be able to spend a half hour with him. But thanks for having me. Good to be here.
All right, Chase McCabe. We'll take a break. Come back with Sportsnet's NHL insider Elliot Friedman joining us from north of the border. Smashville Live is sponsored by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, and Red Spirits and Wine here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back to Smashville Live here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Max Herz, your host here on this Wednesday night, talking Preds. Nashville now 39-24-4, third place in the Central Division. That is fourth place in the NHL's Western Conference overall. Firmly in playoff position as we get into the final month of the regular season. We'll play all the way through April. Preds have 15 regular season games left. Got to remember, because of the Olympic break that was and then was not, we'll go a little bit longer this year and be behind the normal playoff schedule, which I think will be a lot of fun. We got a lot still to play for in the month of April, and as we get into it, the playoffs will start the first week of May, and the Stanley Cup will be handed out sometime in July. So we continue to be a little bit deeper into the summer in the NHL playoff season schedule as the aftermath of COVID, and this time, a season that started on time, delayed along the way by COVID, but still done when it was supposed to be as they filled in those Olympic dates with COVID makeups. The Predators will be in Buffalo on Friday night to take on the Sabres. First meeting of the year, the Sabres won here in Nashville 4-1 on January the 13th, and they actually played without some of their big guns in that game. That was after the Jack Eichel trade, so Alex Tuch, who they got for Eichel, was in the lineup. But they did not have Tage Thompson, who's been hot recently. They also did not have Casey Mittelstadt, who's been very good as well. And Peyton Krebs, who was the other piece of that Golden Knights return, had not yet made his NHL Sabres debut. So some potential big guns for that Sabres team. They'll also be honoring their longtime announcer Rick Jenneret at that game Friday night. So we know our Buffalonians, former and original Buffalonians, Pete Weber, Brent Peterson, who played for the Sabres, and the many other Western New Yorkers in the Preds organization will enjoy being there for that one on Friday night. After that, for the Preds, they're back home on Tuesday night, April the 5th, against the Wild. Mentioned in the first segment that the Wild will be here twice. Two more visits from the Wild and a potential playoff preview, depending how things fall. So the Wild will be here Tuesday, and then two Saturdays from now, the Florida Panthers will come in at 5 o'clock to start the first of three straight weekend back-to-backs for the Preds. Two of them have travel. One of them is just a pair of home games. So it'll be the Panthers on Saturday, April the 9th, and then at Pittsburgh on Sunday, April the 10th. Smashville Live, as always, is presented by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, and Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. We are happy to welcome in our guest for the second half of the show, Elliot Friedman, Sportsnet NHL Insider, is joining us. Elliot, thanks so much for hopping on.
I should have combed my hair. I didn't do a very good job with this.
Well, it's mostly radio, don't worry. And as you've said many times, you like doing radio because you don't have to shave. So
that's right. I like that. I should have combed my hair, though. That is terrible. Okay.
Welcome aboard Sportsnet NHL Insider, who you can hear every Thursday afternoon at 1 here in Nashville on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. And Elliot, you get to talk about the Preds with us every week. What do you think about the Preds at this point in the season?
I've been impressed. I don't know what, you know, honestly, I don't know what we thought we were going to get at the beginning of the year on, to be honest. I didn't know what to expect from them. You know, every year, I don't normally pick teams in order. I kind of pick, like, here are my contenders. Here are the teams I don't think that can contend. Here are the teams that if they're lucky, they'll be better than we think. And here are the teams I honestly don't have a clue about. And this year, the Predators would have been in my situation where I really wasn't sure what we were going to be getting. I didn't have a clue. They've been better. They've surprised this year. You know, even if they go out in the playoffs, they're not going to make it easy on anybody who's going to have to get them. And you might have the MVP of the league. So I think, you know, that's the way I look at the Predators. They're a lot better than I expected they were going to be.
Roman Josi, who you mentioned as the possible best player in the league, one of many top-notch Preds who is having their best season ever. What's it been like from your point of view to see him do what he's done at a level he's never done it, while they load up the top line and Forsberg, Johansson, and Duchesne go crazy too?
Roman Josi, like, when you play minor hockey, and I did in the 70s, there's always one kid in the league who has the puck all the time and just goes wherever they want with it. That's what it's like to watch Roman Josi right now. It reminds me, there was a kid I played with. His name was Derek Duvaux when I was like 8 years old, and he had 80 goals and 3 assists in 15 games. And he always had the puck and he went wherever he wanted. And even back then, and this is like 1979, they were creating special defenses where they would try to stop him, and they didn't care about me or the other idiots on the ice because he was the only one who could score. That's what it's like watching Josi this year. It's been how he controls games when he's on the ice. It's been really amazing. And, you know, I think both the players and the organization deserve a lot of credit for, you know, Forsberg, there's a certain expectation. I think with Duchesne and Johansson, there had been expectation, but we lost it. And I think we were beginning to wonder if they were going to ever recover what they could be. And to their credit and to your organization's credit, you found ways to get those guys back up to where we expect.
Wild to think that those two were both unprotected in the expansion draft last summer, and here we are with them having career years. Elliot Friedman is our guest, Sportsnet NHL Insider here on Smashville Live, ESPN 102.5 The Game. And Elliot, I know you're a big fan of tracking zone entries and how teams get the puck into the zone. Roman Josi carries the puck into the zone better than anybody. What's how do you focus on that league wide, and what stands out to you about the way Josi does it?
Well, first of all, everybody knows how good he is. It's not like this is a big secret. It's not like he's really surprising us. He's one of the greatest players in the NHL, and everybody knows him as such. I think there's something even more impressive about the fact that everybody knows he's going to do it. Everybody wants to try to stop him from doing it, and he can still do it. You know, this is a player who has a chance to get 100 points this year. And for defensemen, you know, we got used to Bobby Orr doing it. And if you're really young, you know, Bobby Orr is on the Mount Rushmore of great players in NHL history. There was a guy named Paul Coffey in the 80s who scored at rates that no defenseman aside from Orr had ever scored. And other than that, we never really saw it. And now we're, I mean, for Yost to be on pace to get 100 points, it's incredible, especially in a league where people really know how to defend. The best teams, they can defend. They say, okay, that's your best player. We're not going to let you beat us with him. You're going to have to beat us with someone else. And he's still doing it. Now, I think the playoffs are another issue entirely. I think that he'll be gang tackled once the playoffs start. But I think it is incredible what he's doing, considering everybody is trying to stop him. And I was just asked this on one of our shows up in Canada, you know, who am I voting for the Hart Trophy this year, the MVP of the league? And right now it's one of three guys, and he's one of them.
It's impressive. We're talking with Elliot Friedman, Sportsnet NHL insider, and you mentioned how style of play changes in the playoffs, and Chase and I were just talking about this. This year's Preds team is set up really well to win in the playoff style of recent years. Do you think the playoffs continue to be that way just because it's been so long since we've had a full normal playoffs?
I think it will be that way because I think a lot of things change. Yes, I think the referee's changing, but I think the playoffs change, the players change too. I am a person who really subscribes to that theory that when there's things that the players will do to each other in the playoffs that they will not do to each other in the regular season. And there are things that they will do during the playoffs that they will not do during the regular season. I think it becomes a meaner game. I think it becomes a game where it's harder to get every inch. And, you know, whoever you guys play, it's going to be interesting to see right from game one when the puck drops as to how Yossi is officiated. Because people are going to run at him. People are going to do everything they can to knock him off the puck and knock him off his roots and knock him off his game. And so, you know, do you guys get those calls? Does that mean Nashville power plays, or does that mean, you know, our team's just told, you know, you can defend Yossi borderline illegally to stop him? But I think that's exactly the way the playoffs are going to be. And the question is going to be, how are people allowed to defend them?
Do you view the Western Conference as pretty open despite the presence of the Avalanche at the top?
You know, I think it looks like, you know, MacKinnon skated today, so it doesn't sound like that they seem to be as worried about whatever the finger injury it is that he's got. I think the East is completely wide open. Mm-hmm. If I was betting my mortgage every month, I don't think I'd be putting too much money down on an Eastern team. I think the West is a little more top heavy. I think there's Colorado. I think there's Calgary. You know, I really like what Minnesota did at the deadline. And I would like to think that St. Louis is really good, but I'm not yet convinced of it. You know, like I think there's a bit more uncertainty. I think the Western teams are heavier. I think there's going to be a lot of punishment out there, but I don't think it's as wide open as the East is.
Hey, but only one of those cities is your Twitter cover picture. And that's Nashville, tin roof that's on Demumbrian Street, the great sign yes. Right at the door.
We know. I love that sign. I love it.
We know Elliot Friedman loves Nashville. You hear him every Thursday on Darren Donick and Chase. We'll take a break, come back, talk a little bit about his broadcasting career, life as an insider, and reporting on the entire NHL for Hockey Night in Canada, Sportsnet, and more. This is Smashville Live, sponsored by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, and Red Spirits and Wine here on 102.5 The Game. Welcome back to Smashville Live here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Max Hurs, your host for this final segment with Sportsnet NHL insider Elliot Friedman. Smashville Live, as always, is presented by New Amsterdam Vodka, Red Spirits and Wine, and Spring Hill Heating and Cooling as we come back with Elliot's favorite song, The End of the World as We Know It by REM, which he said many times on this station was his favorite song before COVID. but it really hits home now.
That is true. It certainly does. It certainly does.
It's been a pretty wild last couple of years for you covering the NHL. What you did on a day-to-day basis completely flipped on its head. What have those 2 years been like for you reporting on the league and still being on Hockey Night in Canada, but probably not going to as many games as you once had?
There's no question that the access has been tighter. You know, we don't have dressing room access yet in a lot of our places. And that's one thing you really miss is just saying hi and doing FaceTime, or not doing FaceTime online, but FaceTime in person. I think that's so important. You know, people see you, just say hi. If they've got a bone to pick with you, I think you wrote something idiotic, you know, they can tell you. We just came back from the GM meetings. It was the first one in person in 2 years. That was really good to see everybody. That's important, you know, build it, like anything else, it's about building relationships, right? And we all have some people we have good relationships with and some people you don't, but you like to see them face to face. So, I mean, the one thing is there's always been a clear off season, you know, from Canada Day, which is July 1st to Labor Day, you have time off, but that hasn't happened the last 2 years. So I'm looking forward to more of a normal summer and a bit of a break this year, because I think everybody kind of needs it. I think there's a lot of people in the sport who've been dealing with some level of burnout.
Sportsnet NHL insider Elliot Friedman is our guest, and so much of the reporting you do is from GMs and organizational figures, but also league figures, agents, even players at times, and a lot of that reporting is done anonymously. How does someone become a source for you? How has that process gone over the years with different people?
You know, I should have a better answer to this question. You'd think by now I would. I just think you call around a lot. You know, a lot of it is kind of information trading here and there. There are things you find out that people don't want you to find out. But I think what it really comes down to, Max, is that, you know, do you trust someone and do they trust you? It's about building relationships, like I said. And, you know, sometimes being a reporter means you're kind of put into an adversarial relationship with people, even those you get along with extremely well. You know, some of the GMs I get along with the best, I've had big battles with because of some of the stuff I've reported on their teams. It's not always very easy. But I think what it comes down to is, do you trust someone and they trust you? It's like it's like friendship. It's like business relationship. It's anything else. If two people trust each other, then information will flow.
What is it like for you as a Torontoan, a lifelong hockey lover and reporter, to be on Hockey Night in Canada?
Well, I would say this, my career has definitely exceeded my expectations. My first television interview ever, I was told I was too ugly to be on television, which might still be true. But, you know, I always said I try to be a good enough reporter that someone would have to hire me. And that's kind of what happened. I just think it really is amazing when you're a kid and you watch Hockey Night in Canada, and you want to be a broadcaster, because I knew I wasn't going to be good enough as a player to play on it. I think that you still can't believe it. And it's been, you know, 20 years. Next year will be my 20th season. And it really is kind of amazing. I consider myself very fortunate, and I don't take it for granted.
What are some of your favorite things you've been a part of, whether it's covering big playoff series or some of the big feature work you've done?
I think the playoffs, there's nothing like the playoffs, especially the first round. There's crazy games every night, so meaningful. You know, I think that what happens often, I find, is that at the end of the regular season, everybody takes a deep breath, Max, and either, you know, like you got in and you kind of reset and you're relieved, and then you kind of let it go. And then all of a sudden you ramp right up and you're saying, okay, now it's serious. No more screwing around for some of these teams. And I just find the first round to be awesome. There's no better time of year than the playoffs. And it's some of the favorite stuff I do is that first round. And that's, I mean, I've covered some other stuff. I've covered some Olympics. I've covered some World Series. I've covered some NBA playoffs. And I've seen some great stuff there too. But there's something about when the calendar flips from the regular season to the playoffs, it's always the best time of year.
What is your impression of how hockey broadcasting and media have evolved both on the national level and local level in both Canada and in the U.S.?
It's a great question. I think the social media has changed everything. You know, it used to be that we were the only people with opinions, right? Like if someone else wanted to get an opinion, they had to write a letter to the editor and hope somebody printed, or they could call and leave a voicemail and hope we actually listened to it. Well, now everybody can put things out into the, we can't corner the market anymore on opinions or thoughts or ideas. In some ways, I think that's a really good thing. In some ways, I think it's a bit of a bad thing. But, you know, I think that's one. You know, it used to be, you know, sometimes you could, you know, if a story broke, you could take a little bit of time, and you still want to do that. But I just think the speed of reporting, it's uncontrollable right now. It really is. I think that's the biggest thing that's changed. You know, I think too that, it's really interesting market to market. Like everybody's different. Some places want brutal honesty, some don't. Some want it sugar-coated, and you kind of have to figure out, like, that doesn't really matter for me as much, but I think for like a Nashville broadcast team, you have to learn, like, what do the Predators fans want? Do they want glowing coverage of the team? Do they want you guys to be brutally honest? Do they want it somewhere in the middle? How do they want their game broadcast to look? Like, you guys have a unique setup. You have made a Nashville Predators game very much the identity of the city and or the region. And I think that's something that a lot of broadcasts and teams are always trying to figure out.
Talking with Elliot Friedman, Sportsnet NHL insider, here on Smashville Live. We know it's been a couple of years since you've been here. How deep do the Preds have to go in the playoffs to get you here for a game?
Probably final. I'm usually stuck in the studio for the first three rounds. I have a goal to get back to all the cities I haven't been to in a while. You know, Broadway is calling me. I can definitely feel it. It's amazing when you really think about it, Max, about all of us Canadian hockey snobs. Like, when Nashville was brought into the league, we're like, you know, what the hell is this? And now I don't think anybody could imagine a league without it. I really do think the 2017 Stanley Cup final was a game changer for the NHL in terms of, you know, the not only the quality of play, but what you guys did outside the arena. And I think Nashville, like to me, Vegas is a huge success story, but so is Nashville. I think you guys have made a huge imprint on the NHL. And like I said, I couldn't imagine the NHL without your city in it anymore. You changed the league for the better, considering how snobbish we were at the start of your arrival.
You've been in every NHL arena that you've had a chance to go to. You've broadcast games, or at least been in the studio for games for every team. Are you a big souvenir keeper, memento keeper from places you travel?
I am. I do. I try to keep something from it, whether I buy like a piece of memorabilia, like Predators memorabilia, or, you know, I think I have I don't know where I keep them all, because, you know, we moved and everything gets kind of moved around. But I believe I have like a Predators rally towel here somewhere.
There you go.
I know on my bookshelf somewhere I have a book on the building of the Nashville Predators. There was a book on the history of the team that came out about the time you guys went to the Stanley Cup final. And I know it's here somewhere. One of the games in Nashville for that Stanley Cup final, I was in the booth next to Nick Saban. He came up to watch one of the games.
Wow.
And we did like an overhead like selfie without him, one of those ones without him knowing that we were taking a picture of us next to him. And I know that's on my phone or in my iPhoto somewhere. So those are kinds of the things that I remember about Nashville. You have a great cigar bar there. I know I've been to a couple times too.
All right. Yeah. Well, we got to get to the finals then to get you back here. Elliot Friedman Sportsnet, who we have every Thursday at 1, including tomorrow, on Darren Donick and Chase. Elliot, thanks for being such a big part of what we do, and thanks for doing this tonight.
It's my pleasure. You know, Max, I really do enjoy it. I think after this season, I'm going to be streamlining some of the things I do. I think I need to take some more me time, but being part of the Nashville show once a week is something I'm going to continue doing. I love doing it. I love being on it, and I I really appreciate you guys having me.
We love to hear it. Elliot Friedman, our guest tonight on Smashville Live. Jared Cassidy has been our producer. The show, as always, presented by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, and Red Spirits and Wine here on 102.5 The Game.